The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Paramania, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.
Soul searching.
Hey, good evening out there, everyone in the chat room and everyone listening in tonight. It is 5-7, and we have a great guest for you tonight. We got John Fowler from Midnight Watchman. He's the founder of Midnight Watchman. He's also the creator of the Paranormal Journeys Expo coming up soon. We're going to find out how you guys can participate in that and a lot of other things. I'm going to question him like crazy tonight. Love John. Been trying to get him on the show for a while now. So, hello, John.
Hey, Chuck. How are you?
Not bad. How are you, buddy?
I'm all right. Allergies kill me, but, you know, that's normal for me this time of year.
Yeah, well, you know, the way the weather is, it's, what, 50 up here in May?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. How's everybody out in the chat room doing tonight? Good. Okay. Listen, quick question.
Sure.
I got my general list of questions, like I always do for everyone. And we start off with the most general question with everyone, just because it's kind of like, I want, you know, the show's about you, it's not about me, I want everybody out there to get to know you. So the general question of the day, how did you get into the paranormal, John?
Well, I mean, my whole life I've been interested in the paranormal, for, you know, basically because of things like Ghostbusters, Unsolved Mysteries, and then having some odd experiences too growing up. And finding some of my dad's, you know, books that happen to be on things like the Bermuda Triangle and, you know, stuff like that, gave me a very big interest in it. And then as the years went on, I started to be able to, like, try to hunt down some books. And at the beginning, it was kind of hard to find books on the paranormal. They were hidden and, you know, or listed under a cult at one point in a lot of
stores. Yes, I remember that. I've always been interested in it, and I remember that we used to have to get special permission to go into the high school library to look up books on a cult.
And as the years went on, my, you know, reading and my knowledge grew, and, you know, then it got to be, you know, friends going to check out urban legends about, you know, like the next covered bridge that's near us, you know, the good old covered bridge legend, you know, somebody hung themselves, you know,
right.
Yada, yada.
Yep.
And as the years went on, you know, I really wanted to start a team. It just didn't work for a while just because people weren't as interested, you know, when I was like 18, because everybody's got other priorities for the most part. And, you know, fast forward a few years, buddy Tony went out to Gettysburg, got some weird pictures with his wife, and we debated them. And, you know, between me and Tony talking, we said, you know, we should go out and investigate this. I wonder how hard that is. I made a couple, you know, inquiries to the Jenny Wade House out there and found out that,
yep.
You know, lo and behold, they do allow investigations. We scheduled one, and November 2007 was the first official Midnight Watchman investigation, and we haven't looked back since.
Yeah, that's sweet. Being a Ghostbusters fan, did you happen to catch last week's show? Because it was awesome. And if you didn't, the guy's coming back on later. He was in Ghostbusters 2. He's the world's biggest Ghostbusters fan. Peter
cool,
Mosen.
Yeah.
So if you want to go back and listen to that on demand, anyone else out there, that was an awesome show. He's got some awesome stories to tell. We're going to have him back on there.
You have to check that out.
Shout out to one of my team members out there in the chat room. Have you ever, John, been legitimately scared? Like, you know, you're doing something. I mean, we're all men. Don't get me wrong. But I'm going to tell you right now, there was a point where I almost cried at one investigation because I was so scared.
I guess freaked out would be a good term a little bit. And not probably the most. I don't know if I'd ever say scared as in, like,
Like, I'm not saying scared for my life. I guess I'm leaning more toward freaked out. Because, you know, it's a nervous feeling when you're in the middle of that and things are happening.
Yeah, definitely. We did an investigation at Stemmy's place, also known as the Black Horse Inn in Easton. It's been on TV a few times, like Animal Planet's The Haunted. Johnny, the gangster that was shot, you know, and killed there, and they're still not sure who did it. You know, many stories. Waitress that passed away there. In the middle of an investigation in the basement, I was trying to contact Johnny Ferraro, I believe his last name was, the mobster, because the owner brought up a story about there's a legend about his treasure is hidden somewhere in the basement.
Right.
Which, you know, sometimes that happens with urban legends, and, you know, it always pops up, why was somebody killed? It had to be treasure, you know, or something along those lines. Even though the guy worked for the mob and was not really well-liked, even by the mob, which is probably why he got, well, whacked. But suffice to say, we were doing a ghost box session. And I know different people have different views on the ghost box, and that's fine. We try
it's cool.
All kinds
I think,
stuff out.
I think you have the right to have your own opinion either way. I use it as an entertainment device, so...
Yeah, and I mean, we like to try things because I'm a firm believer if you don't try it for yourself, you're not really sure what, you know, somebody's telling you. And it's not a knock on people. It just confirms things.
That's right. It's like I told Kenny Biddle one day, I said, if a guy's digging a hole looking for a ghost, who's to say that he's not the one that's going to find it?
That's true.
Use your own methods.
Discuss that type of stuff with.
Yeah. Kenny's cool.
Yeah, he is.
You know, just since we're on the discussion, he likes your team. I just want to let you know. I think he said to me that you guys were willing to answer any question he had, and he enjoyed hanging out with you. So,
yeah, when we met him the first time officially, he grilled one of my members in a good way. And I mean, if you wouldn't have, I would have stopped it, obviously, because, you know, I'm the founder. But, you know, he asked a lot of good questions. And on my end, it was nice to see my member, John Brandis, actually kind of get forced to talk. He's not one to talk sometimes. He's kind of shy. So, you know, Kenny did a good job of getting, you know, answers out of him and even, you know, at least responses instead of like I've seen other teams do where they kind of clam up or start to BS their way out of stuff instead of just being honest.
And then get mad and block them on Facebook.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised if he pops in. I think he pops in just about every show to say hi and then he leaves.
Yeah. I won't be surprised. But, yeah, it's great. And going back to Stemmy's with your question, doing that ghost box session – we had myself, Becky, and Brandis again. We're down in the basement. We kept getting the number 6 was coming through constantly on the stupid Frank's box. Now, that itself is nothing really bad. You know what I mean? You get some weird things sometimes through Frank's box. You get FM or AM, whatever you're on. Usually, I use AM myself, but you get radio noise.
Right.
So you get weird stuff occasionally. The feeling down in that basement started to become almost like the best way I can describe it for myself is if you've ever been in the middle of a fight in a school with people around you watching, waiting for it to start.
You got eyes everywhere.
Yep. Everything's watching you no matter where you go. And there's some longer hallways near there that, you know, some space. So you get add that little bit of a feeling that happens to people. As well as every time we pressed for, you know, who's talking to me, it basically became, you know, I am 6 or cursing. And I mean, like, cursing, not just, like, one F-bomb, but, like, multiples. So that if this – and that's what made me believe that the ghost box has some potential, at least on the surface.
Because it's vulgar.
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, I mean, AM or FM, if somebody's going to be cursing that much, somebody's out of a job and you would have heard about it.
Right, right. Understand.
So if it's an AM or FM station – you would have heard about that. There's no way.
We got some vulgarity on one over the weekend.
Yeah, and it's amazing when it happens because it's kind of funny the first time it happens because you're like, did I just say that? And then it's like, F you. And it's like, oh, wow, hi.
Yeah, you did just say that.
You know, yeah. And we have literally, I want to say 20 minutes of cursing just about overall from that session, which is insane. But the whole time, we had this feeling that somebody was watching us. And it started to freak out Becky, and even I could see Brandis was uncomfortable, and I really didn't like having my back to the best way to call it, is the junk that's in the basement behind me, you know. And I got a feeling like it was swirling around is the best thing to say. And it started to freak me out because, honestly, I don't like having that fight-or-flight response kick in, number one. And number two, when you can't even see what it is that's causing it.
Even worse.
Yeah, it's even worse.
Yeah.
And I had another member of my team come down who's no longer with us, but he came down. I had him try some stuff. And then once we reviewed, we found out something interesting. When I left, the cursing stopped. The voice on the Frank's box that we were looking at for the EVPs changed to a woman. At least I believe it's a woman. And basically, as soon as my other member came down, she started saying, "Please don't hurt me." And it was pleading. And then the owner's name came through, Al, a little while later from her. And what's interesting is with these, you know, combination of things, the waitress in question that died there was basically beat up by her boyfriend, and she died on property in Al's arms. And I feel we got a piece of history replayed for us down there that night.
Isn't it amazing, you know, when you capture something like that?
That's why even talking about it, I have to kind of pause, because it almost doesn't sink in that I believe that. And it's
right. And it's hard to believe your own evidence sometimes. Sometimes you look at it and say, do I really believe this? I mean, it's undisputable. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I can remember one of our stories. We went to a home and we got this girl's voice several times. And, you know, she said some things, and that voice was no one's in the rooms. And then we started researching the home and found out that a young girl matching that name hung herself in the 70s in that home.
Cool. I mean, that's all I can say sometimes. It's cool. It's just these connections that we don't always know about that, you know, reveal themselves.
Right, and it's amazing. It really is. I have all that evidence in a folder, and it's one of our best finds. And, you know, it's hard to dispute. Like, you know, I'm very open-minded, and I tend to be a debunker. I tend to be a non-believer. But at the same time, there are some things I can't. It doesn't matter how many times you add 2 and 2, you don't always get 4.
Oh, no. I love the cases where you answer, you know, 10 questions that you start out to look for answers on, and you have 20 more when you're done. I think that's part of the fun of it. You know, just like at the one of the investigations at historic place, we found, and I forget the name of the chemical right now, but it's a chemical that was listed on a wall that's on a board covering, I guess, wherever it was, you know, stored, quote unquote. I looked up this chemical, and it turns out that can cause hallucinations and some other things. Well, I don't know for sure, because I'm not going to, you know, potentially disturb a chemical like that, you know, without knowing exactly what it is. But if it's still there and like the container's leaking, it would explain some of the activity in the location. Not all of it, because, you know, that's not going to cause an EVP.
Right.
But would explain some of what people are seeing. And that's something that, you know, we were there a few times before and never even noticed it until one of the last investigations. I just happened to, you know, notice there was writing on this, read it, took a picture, you know, to look up later and looked it up. You know, there's stuff when a place is built in like the 1800s,
a lot of chemicals that we don't know, you know?
Yeah, 100 renovations in that time. Who knows what's still on those walls? Like, stuff like that was commonplace in the 1900s. Nobody knows. You know, 20 owners later, they're not going to know what was different or what was taken out or not.
Yeah, the Pups team just went on an investigation, and they wore white suits and dust masks.
Yeah, but I saw that. And that's safety is something that I think a lot of teams don't always...
They don't bring it into consideration, and they really should.
They should. Yeah, they should.
Just since I'm on the subject, it was the I just want to let everybody out there listening know that was the old Montgomery County Jail that we are currently protesting against. I have just found out that the community has taken it into consideration, and they are going to reassess the building for repairs. Just so you guys know, it will not be torn down at this time.
That's a good first step.
It is amazing, and that's actually how they got into it. And they had a couple county officers come out with them, and it was a last-minute thing, and the whole Pups team got to go investigate the whole jail. Nice. It was very cool. Very cool thing. And, yeah, we were out at the Plank House while that was happening. We investigated the Plank House over the weekend. Nice place. A lot of history at the Plank House. It's amazing how they're digging it up and the architecture and the way that they're doing the archaeology, you know, the digs and the finds, and they have a whole room of stuff they found there.
Oh, that's also amazing, too, when you can be at a location that's actively looking for its own history. It's amazing to see. Like, I'll use Jenny Waite House out in Gettysburg with the museum. They like I said, 2007 was our first investigation. We tend to go out there at least once a year and visit, whether it's an investigation or not at the place is another story, but we go out and do it. About a year or two ago, they started adding, you know, pieces of the original house, like the blood from Jenny Wade's, you know, body. It had a piece of a floorboard they're adding into the museum. You know, that's not something that's there anymore, but it's a piece of what happened there. One of the shells that crashed through the, you know, the home from the Civil War, you know, artillery. It's stuff like that that makes, you know, not just cool to look at if you love history, but it's a piece of the history of the building you're standing in.
Right, which makes it so much better. Mm-hmm. And I believe, honestly, that me and my wife and my child got into this for history, not for ghost hunting, ghost busting, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I love to do paranormal investigations. I think it's a neat concept. I'm fascinated with some of the equipment that's used. I know how it all works, and you know, I may not believe in half of it, but again, everyone's method is everyone's. But I think the history alone is what attracts me to it. You know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that's over half the fun sometimes is learning the history of some of these places. Stemmy's place, for example, had a speakeasy in the basement apparently at one point. And another point there was a disco bar down in the basement. As well as, you know, besides the fact it was a stagecoach house, you know, long before that, you know, you'd stop and stay overnight there.
Yeah.
It's just amazing that, you know, all the years it's still there. And it's amazing.
I had the opportunity to go to a stagecoach house that George Washington had stayed in.
Nice.
And I want to tell you, just being in the building alone gives you this feeling of amazement. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just walking around. And they have it set up real well. They have busts of George Washington and pictures of him all over. It's actually a Masonic lodge now. And the history in that building alone. They still have the railing that you used to tie your horse to. I mean, the original, you know, and you just don't get to see that every day.
No, you don't. And I think that's why I love Gettysburg so much, because there's so much history that's in the town besides just, you know, the Civil War aspect. Some of the museums there have things, you know, that's just American history, generally speaking. I mean, it's not even military related. It's just history. Like, where do you see this stuff, you know?
All right.
You can't beat it.
Another quick question, and I think I already know your answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it for everyone else out there. Have you ever seen anything that you believe to be 100% paranormal?
Well, yes. Do I have anything to back that up, you know, to show people? God, no. But and ironically enough, I think the most stuff I've seen is probably not an investigation. It's just in my own
life. Isn't that strange?
Yeah, and some of the story, you know, the stories, I should say, are, you know, definitely personal, like most of it. I mean, you have personal experiences on cases, too. You take your, you know, you take your recorder off to use the bathroom, and that's when you see something or hear something, and there's no proof of it, you know. Or
right.
In the case of what I'm thinking of right now, we're out in Gettysburg again at the Jenny Wade House, which is just seems to be, for me, always turns back to that. But
I got this great little story, and my mom might freak out on me, so everybody be aware. She's out there in the chat room. I love when my mom logs in because she doesn't like me ghost hunting. But I believe when I first started that something followed me home. And, you know, it's something that happens regularly. And I don't think it was anything dangerous. But, you know, when we first got into it, my wife and I laid down one night. And I said goodnight. She said goodnight. And there was a voice in between our heads that went, goodnight. And she looked at me and said, I just told you goodnight. I'm like, no, you heard that too? She's like, yes. And it was more like a childish voice. It wasn't a couple of days later, I was laying with my face down in the bed. I reached over, I put my arm around her, fell asleep, woke up a few minutes later. She wasn't there. She walked into the room, and I said, where'd you go? She said, I haven't been in here. Now, you know, it's these little things that'll stick with me forever. I believe I woke up one night, and I seen two shadows at the end of the bed that were children. Now, call me crazy. But, you know, there's a point where even if you don't believe, if you search for it enough, you're going to find the answer. It's just, you know, I don't think anything was here to harm me. I seen it, and then I asked for it to be gone, and I haven't had a problem since. You know, just like everyone else, I see the occasional shadow out of the corner of the eye. But, you know, that there was something steady happening for about a week, and then I said, you know, this is enough. You guys have to go. Didn't have any problems.
Yeah, I mean, I had a situation where a friend of mine had an attachment of a spirit, I believe, because she definitely was having some issues in life. And she might have been having a breakdown, too. I mean, I'll be honest. There's some other rational explanation for some of the things that happened in this time. But I know when I talked to her one time because of the paranormal end, I recorded the conversation. And in the middle of, you know, reviewing it to make sure that, you know, she wasn't double talking me, because, you know, I always double check things. That's just the way I am. You know, if somebody's lying, even if they whether they mean to or not, they're going to mess up on a story. I don't mean a little bit. They'll contradict themselves.
Absolutely.
So I took my notes and then I replayed it back to listen to it, mostly just for the note end. And it ends up I got an EVP in that. And in the middle of it, you can hear a little girl in the distance, and I mean in the background distance, say, "Is anybody there?" And it's when we were talking about my friend visiting her daughter who passed away at a cemetery. And the crazy thing about that time period, for me at least, was most of the stuff that I was, I guess, I don't want to say seeing, because that's not the term I mean, maybe a third eye type deal, was a little girl, Victorian era, I was seeing constantly. And the same, like if I saw it and if I, my friend would see it the next night and would go back and forth, and I would never tell her when I saw it for the longest time, but it was always like back and forth. If it wasn't near me, apparently it was near her. And it's a crazy thought process, because she described the same thing without me telling her anything.
Yeah, that's, you know, when stuff starts scaring you, when multiple people can describe the same thing.
And that situation was very unusual for me too, because I remember one time I was taking a nap. I felt, you know, like I woke up for no reason. I was like, that's weird. Looked around, went back to sleep. And I felt a whisper in my ear. I can actually feel breath, and it said, "Daddy." And when you feel breath in your ear, you know, with no wind, you know, and no fan on in an apartment or a house, you know, that gets your attention. I thought somebody might have came in, you know, a neighbor or something came in, you know, because our apartments look the same. And, you know, kids sometimes, they wander in the wrong apartment. You know, I looked over and nobody's there. And I checked the whole apartment. My door is locked. There is no way anybody got in that apartment, let alone talked to my right ear, which was away from, you know, even a window. I had some other weird experiences like along those lines. And we started getting EVPs of a little girl through the Frank's box too, at different cases throughout that next like 6 to 8 month period. And I couldn't explain this at all. But a friend of mine who she's, you know, she's a self-proclaimed psychic, and I'll be honest, I am very tough on psychics, because, I mean, how do you really prove that? You know, I mean, people are good at reading each other, and some people are good at cold reading and, you know, getting information when they don't even realize they're doing it. They're not, maybe not, you know, maliciously doing it, but that's just naturally them. She told me about the little girl and some of the stuff, and I thought that was just weird, because I never mentioned it to her, you know, at all. So we had this little girl floating around. I had this dream one time about a little girl in a haunted house that I, you know, bought in the dream, which is always great when you have dreams like that. And she appeared to me the same way, Victorian era, and told me that, you know, nobody ever wants to play with her and nobody ever stays. Kind of like Alice in Wonderland. So I always called her Alice. And we, for a while, I could get her on a Frank's box. If I asked for Alice, she talked to me. I believe anyway, again. Now, is that my own...
say it can be your own doing, but I mean, you know, if you believe what you're talking to, it doesn't really matter in anyone else's eyes anyway. You know what I mean?
And that's true. I mean, I'm open and honest. I will give you sometimes, I'll tell you that this is amazing what we caught, but in the same way what it could be.
Yeah, but you really don't have any scientific evidence to back it up. No. There is no science to ghost hunting. As many people out there that say they use scientific devices and things like that, yeah, but you know, that device it's not proven to measure, you know, a ghost. You know, it's something that someone said one day, and everybody's been using electromagnetic field detectors and things like that, and you don't even know if it's actually capturing what you're looking for. You just know that it goes off once in a while.
That's very true. It's a lot of theory and idea out there, probably mostly ideas.
Yeah. So, I have a new method I'm trying to develop right now, and I'm going to be honest with you. The first time it happened to us, it was a freak accident. So we tested it out over the weekend, and it it worked. So I'm going to test it a couple more times, get some video of it working, and release it to the public. It's a completely new method as far as I know.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I wish to a point that we had more of a standard for what we do, but then again, I think if we had more of a standard, we'd miss so much as well. I mean, just learning.
Right. The standards, I believe, are needed. We always need standards and protocols to weed out the dummies. But at the same time, for me, it's just a hobby. I mean, there was a time I took it very seriously, and now I got some announcements tonight about Simply Paranormal. I mean, there's a point where you start getting burned out, you know?
Oh, trust me, I know. I mean, between the expo, my side projects, and the group, I've been kind of pulled back as well from, a year ago at this point, basically. I
am completely
with you. And it's fine, though. I'm okay with that. I'm not one of those people that needs to have, a case a week like a lot of groups, tend to have.
Right, and there are a lot that do that, and I just can't do it. I have a life, I have a family, and I have a lot of side projects going on. Most people don't realize that I do the paranormal rehab videos, and I haven't even done one in 2 months because I've been so busy. I do a ton of stuff. I have an in-home vinyl graphics and design business. The list goes on. And even trying to get into, your paranormal expo, it's almost impossible for me at this point. As much as we've probably talked about it 8 times in the past, and I just can't I can't guarantee it, so I don't want to give you my word. You know what I mean?
Oh, I understand. I have had so many people when we announced this that were interested, but because it's the first year, they didn't – it's not that they're bandwagon people or anything like that, but they definitely didn't want to commit
right.
to something that may not be successful. And then now that we got some more people signed up and some of the stuff, rolling, I'm starting to see some more people come in. And also, we're getting closer. I mean, obviously, it's in September. We're, beginning of May now. It's going to be time when more people are going to start to realize, oh, that's around the corner. Do I want to be part of this or not? More than when I think it was August last year, we announced it. So over a year plus from the event date, we announced it,
Right.
And that's okay. I don't know what to expect. I mean, obviously, running it, I want it to be fully sold out for the spots. I want, a billion people to show up. But do I have any idea how successful it's going to be? No.
You know what I like about yours is that it's not for profit. I mean, what do you, a couple bucks donation to see the lectures and, mm-hmm. You're asking, what is it, 40 bucks a table?
Yeah, for both.
Come on. If you're a team and you can't spend 40 bucks on a table, you should not be in the business. Because the cheapest recorder you can buy is 40 bucks.
That's a Walmart special for you as far as I know.
I'm telling you. I mean, I got a recorder in my box that costs $259. And if you can't afford 40 bucks for a table, just get out of the business because you're not going to make it.
I got one of my trainees is very energetic. And he's... He buys some of the newer equipment that comes out, some of the more expensive recorders, and I've been trying to tell him, I'm like, man, I love you, but you don't need it. I mean, I've not seen one recorder that you paid, $80 for that's better than the, $20, $30 Walmart one I have. I don't see a difference in it. Not for what we're doing, not for, maybe for length of time it's going to work. Maybe. But, for me being a little bit cash strapped myself right now.
Right. Now, I'll agree with you on half of that, but not the other half, and I'll explain why.
All right. Go ahead, man.
I am a huge lover of the Tascam DR05 recorder. They're $99 a piece. We have 3 of them, and I absolutely love that recorder. You can listen to it live. You can amp it up. You can change your record depth. You can change your record file, your file size, your type, your bit rate. You can do everything that you need to do, and it's quick, simple, and easy. Now, the $259 recorder I have is the DR40, which has 4 different channels and will record all 4 channels as 2 separate channels 20 dBs apart so that you don't miss anything. You can actually record 8 channels at a time.
See, now, that's pretty cool. I'll be honest, Joe.
I don't like it. The $259 one, I don't like it. I don't think it records as well, and it's a pain to switch each individual channel. Now, I can actually plug in 4 microphones, put them in all 4 corners of the room, and record the same room, and if something happens, I can bring that recording back and play it in 5.1 channel surround sound in my home, and I can listen to what corner it came from. You can create like a 3-dimensional audio environment, but I hate it. It's too much work.
And that is the problem with some of the things. The ideas are there, but they don't quite work out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm five investigations behind on reviewing evidence. I don't really have time to play with surround sound in four different channels.
Oh, I understand that completely. That's why I could say, I mean, and I'll be honest too, I'll say this flat out publicly, I've never used every recorder that's out in the market. So my viewpoint obviously is from what I've used and how I've used it. And like anybody that's newer in the paranormal right now, as in like either running a group or starting a group or, you know, starting to investigate,
you're
going to have
newer
toys
recorders
than what
will work. Well, you know what? I need to come out on an investigation speaking. With you and just show you my stuff. Let you play with it. It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. The Hellmeter, for example, combines a lot of stuff, but, you know, really well.
Right, but it's – I think
it,
I know where you're going with
it. It does have its own issues, any other piece.
I'll tell you what. I got the Mel Rim shadow detection device, and it was one of only seven or eight that were made as far as I know because it got discontinued because it was so hard to make. I waited on it for 5 weeks when I purchased it, and it was not cheap by any means. But what I don't like is that you have to have all three devices in the same area. I would prefer having a REM pod, a Mel meter you can walk around with, and a shadow detection device set up stationary. But all three of those devices are built in, so either you're not using all three of them at one time, or if you are, you can't touch the device. You can't even get near it because the shadow detector picks you up. So here I am. I've purchased all three of these devices, and I find myself trying to save up the money to purchase them again individually. So, you know, I'm for the cheap Mel. That's just... You know, if you're going to use it as a temperature gauge and a electromagnetic frequency detector, buy the cheap one and then buy the other stuff separately. My personal opinion.
I think that's true. I mean, I think a lot of groups just get to the point of it's toys. And, I mean, I can't say much different. I mean, when I started, stuff like that wasn't really around.
Right.
I mean,
it just
wasn't. I mean, that's why my stuff's separate. And that's the way I learned to do it. But, you know, if you have the money and you want to buy, like, you know, five of anything that's expensive like that and you can afford it, more power to you.
Buy five of them.
You know what I mean? But
yeah, there are some teams that do that.
I know. I've seen some teams that have an amazing amount of equipment and nobody knows how to use them, though, really. And that's the shame of it. I mean, if you don't know how to use your equipment, you just shouldn't be in the field. You have to learn how to use your equipment.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to understand that equipment like it's the soundboard that I'm broadcasting the radio show on. You got to know it.
Exactly.
You can't just walk into a building and turn on a button. And, you know, I know paranormal investigators that don't even know what MG means. I mean, no. We're searching for milligauss, people.
And I mean, nobody's asking anybody to build the equipment, you know, by hand, but understand,
right.
You know, understand where its limitations are. Like K2 meter is a good example. You know, they have uses, but you have to know, you know, where its drawbacks are too. You know?
Right. And you got to understand its uses in order to understand its application for what you want it for too.
Yeah. And I mean, as an RF meter, it does work great. Very visual.
Oh yeah. It works wonderful.
And if that's all you want it for, hey.
Well,
great.
You know, here's the thing. You need to know that it's a great RF meter because if you're in someone's house and you're near a Wi-Fi antenna, for example, you need to know that you're picking that up and it's not a ghost that's making it blink.
See, it's funny. So many people have told me about the Wi-Fi antenna from a router. I have never seen one set off a K2.
Oh, I've seen it so many times.
And that's
seen
the amazing
one.
Thing. And I've tried. And I'm like, I never get it. And I mean, I've heard it enough to know that it's, you know, probably doing it, but it makes me wonder, okay, why can't I get, you know, on a wireless connection internet downloading something to get the stupid thing to trigger, like right near the, you know,
right
router box.
Right.
Now, I just don't know.
Joey out in the chat room said, go simple and you'll have the best fun. Joey's from Seekers Club Paranormal out of Queens, New York. And those guys are awesome up there. And he's right. I'm going to be honest with you. I was just talking to John about it before we came on the show because we connect early to make sure everything works right. And I went to Selma Mansion, and I've been there 10 times, love the place, always have fun. But my last investigation was not very fun for me because it took me 4.5 hours to set up the equipment. I broadcasted live over the internet for 6 hours. It was a huge success, but there was no fun in that at all. It was like a day of work. And it was 12 hours long, and it just kicked my butt. Now, we turn around, we go to the Plank House the past weekend, which is, which is a tenth the size. It's two rooms, basically. And we brought nothing but the basics. And I'm going to tell you what, I had a blast. I just, you know, being able to pay attention to what I'm doing and enjoy it instead of trying to let everyone else enjoy it, it was completely different.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I mean, we have an 8-camera DVR system, and I know some people have the 16s or 32s, and it takes a lot of work to set up a DVR. I mean, to run cable and get, you know, tripods up, cameras up. And if you got people who are just, like, you only have a small group, I mean, if you're going to run, even an 8-camera system, it's going to take some time to set up and take down.
Right. You know? We have an 8-camera system. Yep. And that's definitely the truth. I mean, we set up an 8-camera system, and I have 7 people on the team full-time, and it'll take us an easy hour and a half to set everything up. You know, we're running cords, we're putting cameras up, we're connecting cameras to places, we're running the wires back, getting it all working, plugging them all in. I mean, it's a system. It really is. Mm-hmm. And I even have stuff like on the – if you watch my very first paranormal rehab video, you'll see that I color coordinate the cords. And that's done because – a lot of times we'll have someone who's new on the team or something, they'll run the cord, and the cord will be backwards because you have to put the cord a certain way.
Yep.
So I've color coordinated all of the cords so that you know which end goes to the DVR system. And it's a time saver, but it just doesn't save enough time, you know? You still got to run that cord.
Yep. And if it's a big building, you're, you know, going back for more or an extension or, you know, whatever the situation is, it does take time.
Right. I just had to order 2 100-foot BNC cords for the last Selma investigation so I could get a camera down in the basement.
Yeah, I believe we ordered from the Ghost Hunter store when we got our new system. I think it's the 100, not the 100, was it 100-foot cords?
They come in 100 and 160 as far as I know.
I think it was 100-foot cord. I think we got 8 of them basically because we got 8 new cameras. And then I had a couple... you know, I think 50-foot extension cords I'd had before for them.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of cable to drag with you, too, no matter, you know.
And again, if you can't afford a $40 recorder, let me tell you something. The cable and the BNC splice connectors alone are $150. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a cheap thing.
No, I mean, I know what we spent for our DVR and well, actually, not even the DVR. DVR was a separate purchase, but for just the cameras and tripods and cabling. And it's not something, like I tell people, DVR systems can be challenging to learn if you don't know what they are. You're never going to get the high-end ones. Like, just get it.
Exactly. Listen, real quick, Anthony, if you click on your name over in the online users window, you can change your username so you don't have to keep typing it. Just letting you know.
Yep, and it's amazing. Again, it all goes back to knowing your equipment and learning, you know, one, what's best for you, and one, how to use the stuff. Because it's just... you got to learn. I mean, that's the bottom line.
You know, the worst part to me is charging it all, man. The night before, come on.
it's worse depending how much stuff you have or if you, you know, it's insane. You got like 20 batteries
like,
charging.
If you're going on 4 investigations in a month, you can legitimately see your power bill change.
Yes, I've seen that.
How many people are on your team, John?
We have like 5 right now officially on the team. And, you know, a few other people that I have behind the scenes that are kind of trainees, but they're not active members yet. You know, they're just still working their way into the fold. And I'm hoping that once we get everybody on the same page, we can really knock out some old review and move forward on some of the stuff that we've been trying to move forward on. Like, we're working on some IR lights right now, some EM pumps for the group, and maybe to sell if, you know, they work well enough to sell. I'm working on the website right now to get a shop open online that actually works because I keep having issues with it when I go to do it. You know, there's just so much little stuff we're all doing, and, you know, if there's just 3 of us, there's just no way we're going to get it done.
Yeah,
it's
I understand.
Too much.
Listen, you can. There's an electrostatic detector on my paranormal rehab, too. If you've never seen it, watch the video. I teach you how to make it. It's very cheap to make and very profitable, I believe. I mean, they call them E-Pods and sell them for $75. I built one for $3, so...
Yeah, I did see that video. That was pretty cool, to say the least. I mean, not even just the price, but the simplicity of it all.
Absolutely simple. And everyone I show it to loves it. Loves it.
Right, well, I mean, simple works. I mean, not everything has to be in a nice, shiny case, you know, to be effective. And
absolutely. You know what's cool about it is if you purchase an ePod, which is basically the exact same thing. They take an MPF-102 transistor and they solder an antenna to it, put a little goop in the top of it, let it dry, and they got four LED lights. It's the same thing. Don't get me wrong. But they sell that for $75, and you can't hardly see it when the lights light up or go out. It's too far away, and it's covered with epoxy, glow-in-the-dark epoxy. This device, if it lights up across the room or dims, you can see the room change because it's so simple. The light is the only thing that shows.
Oh, definitely. That's just like some of the IR lights I've seen around, you know, that people make. Some of them are just, like, they're cheap for a reason. And I'm not knocking anybody. It's just that they're, you know, because IR lights are cheap to make. I mean, if you know how to do them, there ain't much to it. I'll be honest. I mean,
yeah, I purchased one because I was in a hurry to get it. And yeah. As soon as I seen it, I'm like, dude, I could have built this for $15.
Yeah, my first one I took apart that wasn't like an actual Sony, you know,
right,
manufactured one. The first one I saw that was basically handmade. No, of course I popped it open to look at it to see how it was made, and I realized, like you said, it's...
Yep, it's a Radio Shack project box with soldered wires. That's it.
Yep, a couple transistors, you know. That's it, and it's... So, you know, we're working on a couple variations to see what we can do that are not better than what you can buy anywhere else, but, you know, useful. That's what I'm stressing to on our end. If we're going to sell something, I want it to be useful, not just... Not the next big thing, but just useful. I mean, that's what you need on investigation. Stuff that is useful, you're going to use, not stuff that's...
Like a pencil and piece of paper? I find that so many teams out there don't bring pen and paper with them. It's the most useful thing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you need to take notes sometime. Like, it's. We just did a church not that long ago, and my friend helps the church, and she actually, you know, helps run investigations through it. We were there for maybe 2 or 3 hours... Just we stopped back at base to do something, and we heard that sounded like a cow moo, a cow. And we're like, what the hell is that? That's all we could say, because it's like, and then a rooster, and we're like, this is weird, because it's a church. Why would we hear this? There's no farms around, you know. Tracked, like, looked around, didn't find anything making noise, came back to the base station again, said that's weird, discussing, you know, a dinner break. And we heard it again, and we finally tracked it back down to the nursery area. It was one of those little not puzzles,
farm toys.
Yeah, farm toys that you, like, you have a little magnet that's supposed to touch and set it off. Apparently, this one was been so busted up from, I guess, kids just pushing the button in. The board was, you know, grounded in places, so as it popped and moved with the temperature, it would set it off. And, you know...
You know, anyone else would have said that was a ghost doing that.
And as soon as, like, I laughed when we found out what it is, but you're right. Somebody else would go, oh, that's paranormal. And I'm like, well, yeah, but we debunked it as, you know, normal. As soon as I said to my friend, she goes, oh, yeah, that has happened before. I should have warned you guys about it. I'm like, ah, it's okay. I'm like, because it kind of, like, it got us going and me going to figure out, okay, what is this? Why is this going off? What's going on here?
You know, being the, what's the word I'm looking for?
Skeptic?
No, not the skeptic, but the investigator. The being the person who investigates and tries to debunk something is the best fun in the world. They say, you know what, we got to figure out how this happened, and then everybody gets interested and excited, you know? Because now you're looking for a resolution to something that's just become a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, like the last private case we did, we couldn't debunk any of the claims that they had, period. And... We tried, like, everything we could think of. We tried, you know, even going beyond, like, what they said, like, if they were misinformed, like, going, like, I say, a door opens, okay, by itself. Trying to figure out, does the door latch, you know, in a weird way? And that the wind could pop it, or a dog or cat could pop it, you know, and then if it gets popped, like, just nudged, how far will it go before it stops? And we found out this door is weighted pretty much that it's, when it's shut, you have to go 3/4 or more before it stays open. So something had to, you know, force to push that door open and then get past that point if it was fully closed, which she's, you know, the owner said it was. We couldn't figure it out. There's no, you know, weird air currents in the house. The windows were closed at the time that she said that was done. And we even tried to, you know, create airflow through the house to do something with a fan and some other stuff. couldn't get it to do anything. You know, we can't explain it.
Yeah, trying to explain it is part of the fun. Yeah, fact or faked, you know?
Yeah, and it's, who knows? I mean, it could be one thing we never thought of, could be what happened that day, but we don't know. And that's the best we could tell them at that point, is we couldn't figure that out. And everything else in that house, well, we didn't get anything on review, but we only debunked one thing. They had a story about hearing a woman pleading for help outside. We found out, listeners don't know, there's red-tailed fox, I believe it is.
And they cry.
When they cry.
Yep.
I believe it's the call, as they call it, does sound like a woman pleading help.
Yes, it does. 100%.
I never knew that myself.
It sounds like a woman crying.
Yep, and it's amazing that it sounds so much like that. That, you know, not knowing that,
and
I would have...
They do saturate our area, just so you guys know.
Well, I mean, down my way, they don't so much, but this was out in the woods more, so, I mean, they had bobcats out that way. I mean, this is definitely the country area, you know, for the most part, compared to where I'm at, which is more of a, you know, town, city. But it's amazing, and that's like something I never knew in all the years I've done investigating that I learned, and, you know, that goes in my, you know, pocket, basically, to maybe pull out later. If we get something similar to that somewhere down the road, can we find out, is that, like, a habitat area for that fox?
Yeah,
potentially.
Absolutely. Listen,
nice
real quick, a couple more quick things we can go over real quick. Guest speakers at your event, just in case anybody out there is interested in being at the event, the date, things like that.
Well, it's September 21st, 22nd, 2013, obviously, this year, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. in Lansdale, PA. If you go to midnightwatchman.com under Paranormal Journeys, there's a full listing of the vendors and the speakers. We have a wide variety of subject matter here, to say the least. And I know I'm a little biased, I'm running the event, but to me, this is what a paranormal expo should have. It's not just, you know, a horror convention thrown into it. And no offense to some of them that go on, but this is for paranormal.
This is just for paranormal.
Yep.
Correct.
I mean, we have people speaking on poltergeist activity. We have Frank from New Jersey, Rope, talking about, you know, paranormal safety and protection.
I had something him on a couple weeks ago. I think I got him next week, too.
Yeah, Frank's a good guy. You know, you don't hear that too much in a lot of these expos. It's more geared towards, you know, this is what we found type deal versus, the safety end.
Right, absolutely.
We got Michael Carroll from Nest, who's talking about, you know, investigating through adversity and true dedication. Rebecca Lynch is talking about preserving history through paranormal investigation, which is, again, something you don't always hear about from groups. And it's a good thing. We need to preserve history.
Completely into that.
Definitely.
I volunteer every chance I get. For those of you out there that know me, I half of my time off is spent volunteering now, so.
I mean, yep, and another lecture is The Skeptic's View of Common Paranormal Theory. Again, another viewpoint, you know, that's not the hardcore, everything's a ghost. We need that balance in the paranormal, you know, and even in groups, you need to have that balance. If somebody goes too far on their own without backing it up, you need someone to pull that back into more of a grounded state. We had another one, that's shamanism and working with the deceased. Shamanism, again, something that a lot of groups don't deal with that I've met. They know about it, but it's not necessarily on the forefront of what they're, you know, wheelhouses, if you will. It's not there. Because like you said before, you know, Chuck, it's the science end, or maybe the metaphysical, but they don't really talk about what that metaphysical is. It's psychic or something else.
Right.
Then Dave Giuliano's doing The Dangers of Ghost Hunting. They're not what you think. Again, people on the outside may not be aware of some of the things that, you know, we deal with, from, you know, mold potentially to, you know,
There are more dangers out there than just the ghost, believe me.
Oh, yeah. And
you know, we go into places that, as a matter of fact, I went to work Monday. My back was killing me just because of the amount of times I went up and down the steps at the plank house. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for a heavy guy to get down those steps. And, you know, little dangers like that, you can get stabbed, cut. I mean, it's all old stuff and old foundations and, you know, a lot of dangers,
Yep, and all those lectures are just Saturday's lectures. I didn't even get to Sunday yet, for example.
Right.
So, I mean, just alone on Saturday, we have a very diverse group.
You have, don't you have Jenny Stewart, the owner of this radio show, this station?
Yes, I do. She's doing a Ghostbox 101 session lecture on Sunday, which I can't wait to hear because I always, like I said, Ghostboxes to me are always an interesting dynamic, whether you get something or not. And it's also very polarized in the field. You know, people either love them
or they hate them. Yep, it's one or the other.
And I understand both sides of that.
I'm a middleman. There aren't many of them out there. I like them for entertainment devices, but the method behind them is just something I question sometimes.
Definitely. And I mean, that's why I was actually, Kenny, I think, is the one talking about peer review, and it made me think that that's a great idea. If you have teams that you know that, you know, you trust.
Review your evidence. Correct. Yes. Yep. Kenny is big on peer review. Peer review is something that should be used more because then you get an outside opinion on something that they have nothing to do with. They're going to give you a critique either way.
And that's what I believe from now on we're going to do with, you know, stuff we believe to go on the website. Now, it may not change what we put on the website, obviously, but, you know, if it's a questionable thing to us and it's leaning towards the website versus just, you know, nothing.
Right.
If a lot of people tend to, you know, fuel the other end of that, we might drop it. I mean, that's not a bad thing, but in the end, it's still a group's decision what they just deem as either evidence or share worthy.
Is Kenny going to be there?
Yes, he's actually speaking on long
photography, right?
Yep, long. I can't even talk right now. Long exposure photography to paranormal.
I'm big on long exposure photography. If you guys haven't seen my work out there, you can go to Selma's group or things like that. You can see a bunch of long exposure photos.
Yep, and Kenny's had some amazing ones too.
Yep,
that are just.
You know what's funny? Me and Kenny are so much alike. It's scary. It really is, and it's weird.
And yep. Kenny's a great guy, though. I will say that. I mean, he definitely very direct and when he asks questions, but it's not a bad thing. I mean, there's sometimes I know some people he may rub the wrong way because he's, well, Kenny, but.
Yeah, he just wants to know. You know, yeah. You got to give him credit for wanting to know.
Yeah.
John, listen, it has been awesome. We are out of time. I play an outro and a couple other things, but a couple quick things. Simply Paranormal is going to be doing some restructuring, so I want you guys out there to pay attention. It's going to be my big goal to bring Simply Paranormal from the status of a team to the status of a brand. I would like to create t-shirts, stickers, things like that. It's not about profitability, but I always wanted my own brand name, and Simply Paranormal encapsulates everything that I do paranormal because my hands are in it a lot, you know? And I think that's the direction we're going to go in. I have just started the creation of a Simply Paranormal magazine. I hope it's going to be quarterly. So anybody that's interested in that, shoot me a message. I'll tell you how to get your hands on it as soon as it's done. The first magazine will probably be kind of slim, but I am looking for teams out there that I can interview or who have evidence that is undisputable or things like that. I want to bring you in. I want this magazine to be something people pick up and read all the time. I want it to be something that people love. So Simply Paranormal is going to be changing their logo and restructuring completely. I'm going to be behind all of that. We're going to continue to be a team, but it's not going to be the focus anymore. The team will continue to do investigations. It's just that I'm going to let the team handle some more stuff while I handle the big stuff. Coming soon, Paranormal Magazine. I'll keep you posted on that. There's going to be a... I need you guys out there that have teams to give me some stories for that. That's going to be fun. And, again, John, anything you want to say before we get out tonight?
Basically, I said if anybody wants to check out Paranormal Journeys, either a group or, you know, just of information, go to MidnightWatchman.com or ParanormalDictionary.com. You can find all the links, vendors, speakers right there, and hopefully you'll join us and, you know, see what we're up to.
Yep. The way it looks, I'm going to be there. So anybody that comes, I'll probably see you there. And John, you're welcome to stay on the line if you want. It's going to be about 5 minutes of audio, and then I'll stop the live feed. We can talk, or you can log off. It doesn't matter. I'll hit you up on Facebook. All right, guys. Good night. Thank you all for tuning in. Listen, tonight the song that you're going to hear is another one by my son. My son loves to share his audio. You can download it free on his SoundCloud account. Just check him out on Facebook. If you guys don't have the information, get in touch with me. I'll send it to you. You can have this audio free. The name of the song is The Journey, and that is it's by Charlie Sanders. So here you go. Good night. Again, that's The Journey by my son, Charlie Sanders. You can download it free. Get in touch. I'll let you know how. Good night.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Paramania, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.